the Initial Reaction Podcast, joined once again by JP Kadoran of Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. Or actually, it is still Time Warner Cable Sports Channel, right? It's now Spectrum Cable. So has something changed on your end, JP?
No, those fat checks that I get are still signed by Time Warner Cable. We don't really know what Spectrum is, if that's kind of like Roadrunner Internet, you know, like just a fun name for cable. Or if that's like our new name, I really don't know. And as soon as anybody else finds out, please let me know, because trust me, I will be the last to know. But until then, I will keep reporting to work, where I work for Time Warner Cable Sports Channel and get to chat with J.R. Ratcliffe of My Country Now. Can you write for My Country Now? That would be so much better.
That would have sort of a political tinge to it, which isn't really my thing.
A little bit.
But,
or it could be, no, you could just report on like U.S. national team soccer and their 4-0 win last night.
I could. That was exciting, right? And
Chicago.
Yeah, I know that. And the Copa America.
Should have gone.
I wouldn't have had any reason to go. But
as a writer for My Country Now, why would you not go?
Well, I don't even know. Is Costa Rica good at soccer? I mean, you would know better than I. I assume they're not bad.
No, Costa Rica is Colombia is. I almost call them Colombia. Colombia is very, very good.
Okay.
And that was who the U.S. lost to last weekend.
Yes. So the U.S. soccer team is 1-1 in the Copa America. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. I think more correctly, it would probably be 1-0-1. But yes, they have 1-1 and lost 1.
Wait.
No draws yet. So they play.
Normally, so it's 1-1-0, not 1-0-1. Or do we have losses at the back end there?
I think losses are on the back end. Ugh. But they have a matchup with Paraguay, this upcoming weekend.
Yes, very good. Well,
they are poised very well to advance.
Excellent work on your pronunciation, Jean Segura, for the win.
So,
we are not talking much more at all about soccer on this podcast. We will be talking about some very interesting topics, though, including a lot of state tournament action going on in the WIAA sphere. I covered state track this past weekend. We've got state baseball coming up, some interesting storylines there. State tennis is sort of in the middle of its state series. It had the individual meet last weekend. The team meet will be this weekend. And state softball set for its tournament this weekend. So lots going on. State golf just finished. And we had some area champions. But the big story. The big story.
How big?
The biggest of the big. So right now, anyway, in prep sports. Is a new basketball coach at Menominee Falls High School, Steve Showalter, who formerly coached Germantown to 3 state titles, 4 straight state championship games. Really should have been, in my opinion, to 5 straight state championship games. They had a little mishap on Super Tuesday, a very controversial finish that we can get into that.
They didn't have a mishap. The time clock operator had a mishap.
I would also argue the officiating crew did not notice the clock didn't start on an inbound that allowed Appleton East to set up a game-winning shot in overtime. But
and then miss it and then put in the replay.
Yes, with 1 point some seconds left. I mean, this is we've treaded that ground before. That was several years ago now. But anyway, bottom line is Steve Showalter, the architect of a basketball empire. He went to coach college ball, assistant coach at Division II Lindenwood for a year, came back to the area. But the news is interesting not because he's going to start at Menominee Falls. It's that he had already agreed to coach at Catholic Memorial. And then decided that the Falls opportunity was a little bit better, so he spent basically a month at Catholic Memorial, and now he has gone over to Menominee Falls, which by the way, when the realignment strikes, will become a conference mate of Germantown, not for his first season, but for the next season. So that'll be an interesting storyline for sure. But what were your thoughts when this all came down? Because there's obviously some negativity being thrown toward Falls for sort of quote unquote poaching. The coach being thrown at Showalter because he sort of changed allegiances on short notice. I mean, I'm trying to look at this from a contrarian point of view, but what was your response to that? Because I know it caught a lot of people by surprise.
Yeah, it's all kind of weird. I don't know. I mean, there are just so many different angles to it. Like, do I get mad at Menominee Falls for seeing that he's coming back and wanting, you know, what they believe to be the best coach for their kids and for their program? No. I mean, how can you fault somebody for doing that, whether or not they've had a job for 10 years or 10 days? You know, how can you kind of fault Menominee Falls for going after him? For Steve Showalter, how can you really fault him for realizing that yes, this situation was good, but this one was much better. You know, how can you kind of fault him for doing that? The answer to both of those is that it's high school athletics, and those types of moves probably shouldn't be involved in high school athletics. There should be kind of a, not, I don't want to say a higher standard, you know, but just it should be better than that. It shouldn't be coaches jumping from place to place, and unfortunately that's what happened.
I do agree with that on the surface, that high school sports sometimes lends itself wrongly to situations where people are going to be jumping around a little bit, especially athletes themselves transferring from one school to another because it's a better athletic situation. I will say that when this happens at the college or the pro level, we so often try to look at it with an apples to oranges comparison of, well, if this were the field of, I don't know, dentistry or business, office work, whatever, and you took a job, but then a better offer came along, nobody would blink twice at that. They just, well, this is the decision that's right for you. It's an apples to orange comparison with college and pro because they're making so much money and there's so many different moving parts involved. But here, this is legitimately a comparison you can make. This is a guy who is making what the rest of us are making. He's in a position, he accepts a position, another one comes open that is a better fit for him, being in the public school system. I don't know how it all works with, he was a Germantown police officer for a while, and there's some sort of pension system, and working in public education is better than private education. So that, again, I don't know the specifics, but that plays a role for him. He gets to be back pretty much in the neighboring community to where he was before and has so many connections and friends. So I guess I look at it and think it's just, yeah, a better job came open. The Menominee Falls position wasn't open in May when he went to Catholic Memorial, and he has obviously a connection with the Falls athletic director, Ryan Anderson, and it puts CMH in a very bad position. But it's also, I mean, it's not like he's jumping from one job to another because it's an extra few million on a paycheck that's already in the millions. You know, this isn't that situation at all.
Yeah.
And if this were any other position, we wouldn't be thinking about it. The only risk is that the only thing you could say that's a little shady is, well, did a high school program look at a guy who had just signed to be a coach somewhere and said, you know what, I got a better offer for you, and sort of undercut that program? I mean, maybe you could say that, or you could just say they already had a relationship and it made sense to explore that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, if somebody calls, and apparently, according to your colleague, Mr. Stephen Teets, apparently Menominee Falls called and Showalter actually did say no at first and then kind of thought about it, and then the next day or a couple days later called him back and said, well, maybe we should explore this. So I don't know. I find it hard to get too wrapped up about it. I think it's unfortunate. I think is maybe the best word to describe it.
Yeah.
That it's just unfortunate that kids are ultimately, you know, kind of put in the middle of this. You know, somebody at Catholic Memorial was talking about, you know, their upcoming season, and they didn't have, well, first they had a coach in Dean Belanti, then they didn't have a coach, and then they had one, and now they don't again. And that's just, that is unfortunate, I think, is the best way to put it.
And he'll certainly get his fair share of vitriol for making the jump, and there's sort of that extra motivation now. Let's say CMH plays Menominee Falls down the road, there's going to be that sort of, I won't say venom, that might be too strong, but definitely a feeling that he sort of jumped ship from one to another. He's a little bit then captive to his own success. If this were a lesser named coach, this would not be making waves. It's similar to when Tom Diener, who was a very celebrated coach, sort of had a similar move in his history as well. So we definitely have seen this before. And I know that, like you said, it's unfortunate because Menominee Falls and Steve Showalter will be vilified to a small degree, if not a large degree, for what it went down.
But even then, it's just like, you know, you might not like the way it planned out, but if it were anybody else in that position, who's to say they wouldn't do the same thing?
Yeah.
I mean, you're in a position, I'm sure he felt terrible about it, you know? Like, I'm sure he didn't like telling his new boss, hey, by the way, I'm going to leave already. But if it's something that's better for him and his family, then go for it, you know? So it's, again, it's, I don't like it. I wish it didn't happen. But if it was me, I'm sure I probably would have done the same thing.
Oh, definitely. And Ryan Anderson, I'm sure, feels the same way. He knows he's going to take a hit, but he said, I think Steve Teets said it right at the beginning of his story. Like, yeah, it's a selfish thing because I want what's best for my athletics program and my community, and that's the person I'm serving, and I've got this relationship with the guy already. I know that he'd have interest. the worst thing that could happen is he says no and we don't discuss it any further. So it
and I think he said, either he said it or I made up that he said it, that if he's not being selfish for Menominee Falls, then who's going to be?
Yep.
And I get it. So it doesn't bother me as much as, you know, it's probably going to bother some CMH supporters or anybody else.
Yeah, it'll definitely be discussed as we get into the basketball season.
You know, the other thing that sucks, too, is there's going to be so many people on the outside that are just, you know, sports fans and very, very casual high school fans. They're going to see something like this, and they're just going to automatically assume, you know, so many bad things.
Right.
And nobody's going to be there to correct them. That's what bothers me about stories like this. Like, for instance, somebody like 620 TMJ is going to get a hold of this and be like, then they're going to take callers from somebody in Elkhorn, and they're going to all of a sudden start talking crap about loyalty, you know, and that sucks.
I completely agree with you. Yes, there are going to be people who don't read the story and don't hear what the motivations were and assume that this is just the next thing that's making high school sports sour, that the coaches are turning into celebrities and that they're jumping from place to place. Where, again, if this guy hadn't won 3 state titles in the recent history, it would make some radar, some radar locally, but it would not be... it would not be a higher profile story.
Yeah.
So yes.
That's a bump.
Yeah, I agree. That's a danger with some of this stuff. We, speaking of sports that I guess could create a little bit of controversy, the Milwaukee Brewers are welcoming the Oakland Athletics to town. They beat them on Tuesday night.
The wild card contending Milwaukee Brewers, thank you very much.
You say potato, I say not going to happen.
You say potato, I say mediocre.
Yes, I say mediocre. The Oakland Athletics are in town. That includes Chris Davis, who was traded in the offseason, former Brewers lightning rod / left fielder, and one of J.P. Cadoran's personal favorite baseball players. He did not play Tuesday night. He was out of the lineup with an injury. Wasn't clear as we record this if he's going to play Wednesday night, but he's been mashing home runs. He's been doing exactly what he did in Milwaukee, and that's hit for power. There was a little bit of a kerfuffle with a local radio station when he refused to talk to beat reporters with the radio station still around, because he perceived that that the radio station had said unkind things about him in the past. He, which is a little thin-skinned. I'm not a fan of that particular behavior, but he was a very polarizing figure, and I kind of just want to look back, because I tell you what, I have more appreciation for Chris Davis now that he's gone, not because he's being missed, but because I think he did get a little bit of a bad rap here because of one particular aspect of his game, and he was very good at other things. You have to explain to me, because you feel very strongly about this, why it was that you are frustrated so much with Chris Davis as a player.
Man. Well, okay, so we don't know professional athletes like at all.
No,
like
not even a little bit.
Not even close. The days of, I mean, I don't know what a lot of people on the outside think, but I'm sure there are some people that, you know, think of 20, 30 years ago where players used to go out to dinner with reporters and see how close people are. So that's like one thing. Like that's even the highest beat reporter in the world doesn't even have that access nowadays. So like even your Tom Hardercourt and Adam McAlvey's, like they are not close with a lot of players, especially the superstars.
Right.
And then you get somebody like us, who I cover the Brewers when I need to. I cover the Brewers when there's a story. I was on the highway in the 7th inning on my way to Miller Park last night because Zach Davies had a no-hitter. I was not there to begin with.
Oh, no. So you missed. You got there in time for the not no-hitter.
Well, ish. I mean, once it didn't happen, I turned around. Same as with Chase Anderson the other day.
Oh,
Chase Anderson, I didn't even get to work before I turned around. This time I got to work, got back on the highway, and then turned around.
So
I don't mind. It's fun.
We talk about bandwagon fans, but you're a bandwagon reporter. You literally only go to the stadium when something amazing has happened.
I cover stories that are there. I don't go to Homestead football practice every single day just hoping that Dave Keel is going to come talk to me. You're the worst. I don't show up to a football stadium 7 nights a week, and then all of a sudden on Friday there happens to be a game when all the other bandwagon reporters show up. You're the worst. Shut up. Anyway, okay, so this whole thing has been one long prequel to the fact that we don't know who these players are. But there are some that you give the benefit of the doubt to. Guys like, for instance, and there's no, first of all, this is nowhere near bragging, because mainly I don't know why this happens. Like, Jonathan Lucroy still remembers my name. Like, I remember interviewing
him.
Yeah, I remember interviewing him the first day he got called up, back when Greg Zahn got hurt. How that name drop. But
yeah,
you know,
he played for like a month, if that, with the Brewers, maybe less.
Yeah, and then Luke Roy got called up, which we all thought to be the backup. Turns out he ended up starting anyway. But like, you know, just from being there every couple of, you know, I'm basically at the Brewers games once every homestand, you know, and I talk to some players. So, but like Luke Roy, a good guy. And then you see his work with Honor Flight. Like, you can tell that even though we don't know him, Jonathan Luke Roy is a good guy, right?
Yeah.
Without knowing Chris Davis, you just know he's a jackass.
There's
every interaction with him that I ever had has been legitimately terrible. And it all starts with the first time that he got called up. He made his first opening day roster in 2013, I think it was, or maybe 14, because he has some games played in 13, but maybe it was 2014. I show up, I think it was actually like the day after opening day, and here I am in my mind, I'm going to do this story on this kid who's 25 years old, just got into the majors, you know, made his first opening day roster. This story is going to be awesome. I was greeted by the biggest piece of garbage like I had ever talked to. Like the amount of pure arrogance and cockiness coming out of this dude's mouth. And I was with an intern too, and she remembers it to this day because we were both just floored at what we were seeing. And like, you got to be kidding me. And so that started off with Chris Davis never getting the benefit of the doubt from me. You know, it doesn't mean I don't like him or anything like that. It's just like, okay, so you just blew, you know, your first impression with me to have any sort of favorable thing. And then you go out and you hit 230 every year, and you just continue to have this arrogance about what you can do and people doubting you and all this crap. And that's when it just got to be too much for me. That a lot of people, I will, you know, athletes and stuff, I will have no problem saying that they're, you know, they messed up or they had a bad game or whatever, or a bad season even, because I'm not like passing referendums on them as a person. Just like they could say I put out a terrible show the other day, and I'd be like, you know what, yeah, you're right, but they're not saying I'm a terrible person. And with Chris Davis, he's like the only person in the world that it's like, listen, you cannot back up anything you're saying, so just shut up. So that is my Chris Davis, that's the story. Somebody like, related note, Chris Carter, the exact same player as Chris Davis. Is he not going to hit 230, going to mash a ton of home runs? The only problem is Chris Carter is not arrogant, and he actually hits. He doesn't just hit 9 home runs in a 2-week stretch and then disappear for 4 months.
Yeah, I love Chris Carter. I've only talked to him one time, but he is my favorite player on the Brewers this year, and maybe in future years when he's not on the Brewers, he will still be among my favorite players.
Chris Carter is exactly what's advertised. You know he's going to strike out a lot, hit a ton of home runs, and he's going to, I mean, he's not going to say anything. He's not going to be the level of Chris Davis awfulness.
Yeah, I guess, well, first of all, I'd never heard that story about your interviewing with him. I did not know that that was sort of the genesis of
this. I
searched
for it on YouTube, too, and I'm really disappointed I can't find it.
Oh, too bad. I have only spoken to Chris Davis a couple times and did not have that experience. I did not think he was chatty. I didn't think he was, you know, like affable or outgoing necessarily, but I thought, I didn't pick up that same vibe. I didn't pick up that he was like just really irritated to talk to me. But you know, that sort of comes back to when you say we don't know these guys. Sometimes they're not bad people. I think of Prince Fielder this way. He's not intentionally trying to be sort of a grump. He's just really shy. He doesn't like to talk to people. So Ricky Weeks, I always felt, was a little bit like that. I think he was just really nervous to talk to people. And as somebody who has covered Major League Baseball, it always is surprising to me when I talk to a guy, and it's sometimes Brewers, sometimes the other team, and it occurs to me, wow, he's nervous. Like, talking to me, of all people, a short, fat man who's bald and is only here once in a while, like, wow, he's actually nervous talking to me. And so, you know, you respect that, try to sort of keep it simple and not, you know, not maybe make the conversation last forever. But I do try to give the benefit of the doubt that way, because sometimes guys, when they are shy or just not, they don't embrace talking, that does come off as, I don't want to talk to you, which is a little bit different, I guess. Now, I certainly didn't talk to Davis enough to get a strong opinion. The main reason that Brewers fans always disliked him, I thought, was because he certainly had a terrible arm in left field, and that led to sort of some ridicule. I mean, it was very much one of the worst outfield arms in modern baseball. But the other side to it is he would hit home runs in streaks, like you said. And I think there was just this feeling that he needed to be better, when he just never was that player. Like, in the minor leagues, nobody said, this kid's going to come up and he's going to be one of the best home run hitters in baseball. He is kind of one of the best home run hitters in baseball, which I think is exceeding expectations. Because to me, he wasn't supposed to be the next great thing for the Milwaukee Brewers. It was, I think, an upset that he even made it to the major leagues to be a regular contributor because he's undersized. He's only about 5'11". He did hit for power, but he didn't have a particularly strong knack for getting on base, and his defense was always going to be a little questionable because of the arm. I was sort of impressed that he achieved what he did. I thought he was a very limited player. I very much am pleased that they traded him when they did. I think they got a great prospect for him in catcher Jacob Nottingham, who was just named to the AA All-Star team today with the Biloxi Shuckers. So I think it worked out great for the Brewers, Chris Davis, and if that he's doing well in Oakland is fine because I still don't think the Brewers are going to do anything this year. So I'm completely at peace with Chris Davis as a player.
What you mentioned was another thing that bothers me of just how, you know, he is a little bit of an underdog or whatever. But again, that's what bothered me even more, that he wasn't this hot shot. It was like, dude, I had thought I was about to do this story on this kid who's like Logan Schaefer. Oh my God, Logan Schaefer is one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life because he was grateful to be in the major leagues because he knew that he was up against the odds. Something like Chris Davis should have felt, but didn't. And that just, It always bothered me so much, and I don't want this to come off as like, dude was mean to me, and how could somebody not want to be interviewed by me? Like, that is nowhere near the case. Like I said, that was just like a first impression. They got confirmed like 10 more times, and then he didn't play well on top of it. So that's kind of the thing.
Yeah, I can understand that. I also can understand why a guy needs a certain level of chip on his shoulder and cockiness to be great and to get to the major leagues. You have to believe that you're better than everybody else. And sometimes that attitude permeates everything because if you don't, you won't survive. And I've had a lot of conversations with wide-eyed rookies that were really happy to be there and then they were gone. And maybe they should have been a little bit more of an attitude guy. Maybe that would have gotten them further. I mean, I think you and I could both agree. We've talked to a lot of players that have had an attitude and maybe Davis is in this camp and maybe he isn't, but have had an attitude and did not have the right to have an attitude. They just weren't great, seemingly weren't affable people, great people. And then we've talked to guys who are stars who have had, like you said, Jonathan Lucroy, have been very gracious over the years.
And for the record, Chris Davis, 14 home runs this year in 200 at-bats. Chris Carter has 16 home runs in 207 at-bats. So
Chris Carter is my favorite thing about the Milwaukee Brewers right now.
Chris Carter hitting .227, Chris Davis hitting .234. So like I said, same exact player, but for me, the attitude, the way you carry yourself, the way you treat other people, that is what gets you the benefit of the doubt, especially when you're not arrogant.
Two thoughts about Chris Carter.
Yes. Hey,
first of all, I guess I didn't know enough about his repertoire. I don't know if he's ever going to pull the baseball. He just flicks home runs opposite field. That's like what he does. Does he pull it at all? And second of all, you just brought up his batting average, but I saw a tweet that they're kind of promoting him a little bit for the All-Star game, and I'm thinking to myself, is he an All-Star? Because he's probably one of the most dangerous home run hitters in baseball, but he's not prolific in other ways, so I don't know how I feel about that.
Apparently Madison Bumgarner is the most potential of home run
hitting.
Have you seen that?
I did. The footage of him taking batting practice. Is incredible.
I mean, Chris Carter is a home run derby candidate, but that doesn't make him an all-star. I mean, if you can do one thing well, which is mash home runs, it doesn't make you an all-star. It just makes you a good home run hitter. You know, so I'm totally fine with him not being in it. What would be more of a Travis Schamockery is if Ryan Braun doesn't make it and get serious consideration for a starting lineup spot or a starting spot in the Major League Baseball All-Star game, because he is having a phenomenal year. He is second in batting average only because Daniel Murphy is hitting .379.
Yeah, who thought that the Daniel Murphy train would keep going after last year's postseason? I just assumed that he was going to get paid, it was going to be a terrible contract because he was a one-year wonder. I guess we were wrong. Sometimes those things, well, at least right now, it's only been a little over 2 months of baseball, but sometimes those things work out. The thing that interests me about Ryan Braun is he is having a spectacular year, like you said. He's fifth in the fan all-star voting at last check in the outfield. Yeah. And I would
I think
that
they're releasing new ones today, I believe.
Of all the guys who are connected to performance-enhancing drugs, as he is, he's probably the most vilified. He still gets booed in a lot of places, and that's for two reasons. One is because he was a star before he took these drugs, which makes it seem like he cheated his way to success. And two is that he lied, you know, lied to the people of Milwaukee and everyone else and said, I certainly did not take this stuff. Yeah. So that's why nobody likes him. And he is still fifth in the All-Star voting, which tells me, A, either people truly don't care at all about steroids anymore, B, that they've forgotten a little bit, or C, they just really feel that the numbers tell the story. And yeah, they don't like him, but they're still going to vote for him. I mean, either way, it's sort of like this PED narrative still is something, for the most part, that is front and center in baseball. And I mean, do you care if guys get dinged for it? I mean, I would care if I lost a guy for 80 games or whatever, but honestly, like, I no longer feel that those guys are dirty cheaters. I just feel like they're the ones that got caught, and that's the way it goes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they're, you know, they're not Maria Sharapovas of the world. I mean,
oh, that's a weird one, too. That's a weird one.
2 years, too. I mean, that is harsh. I think it's time to say bye-bye to her because, you know, she wasn't catching Serena to begin with. But
yeah.
Anyway, I think you're right about the fact, the reason he gets booed so much, he's the most vilified, well, behind A-Rod, of course. The reason he's the second most vilified is because, yeah, he lied. And not only did he lie, but he came to a vigorous defense, which all proved to be a Travis Shaw mockery of a defense. So I think that's the obvious reason of why. And then as to why he's fifth, I think that people, I don't know. I mean, I can only project opinions on people. My opinion is clearly did it, clearly got caught. But also at the same time now, I have to feel like he's being tested harder and more vigilant about not taking them. You know, so like I believe that he's clean more now than ever before.
Agreed.
And so
yes.
That's my opinion. So I assume that other people have to have, there has to be somewhat of a similar thought. And also just kind of not forgetting about it, but just kind of forgiving and be like, okay, well, he's a steroid guy. Turns out there's a ton of them. He's still hitting 330. So he's pretty good. He should probably be on the All-Star team. You know?
Let's say his career continues like this for a couple more years and into his mid-30s. He's still one of the best hitters in baseball and has a decent last act where he's, you know, competent as a hitter. What will the Hall of Fame, I guess it's impossible to project because we don't know how people are going to feel about steroids and PEDs 10 years from now at all. But I'd be curious to know if he gets some traction for the Hall of Fame. He may not even have the resume now anyway, but especially because he missed a lot of time the last few years. But I'm just so fascinated to know because it'll be a very interesting case. The first time you have a player who has put up big numbers after he got hit with a PED suspension because it almost shows that, well, maybe those PEDs weren't really the driving force after all. Maybe he really is just this good.
Well, and I think that also goes back to the reason of why he took them. I mean, I'm probably in the camp, and we'll never know the answer to this, but I'm probably in the camp of there's a certain baseline of how good Ryan Braun is, and I'm holding my hand at a horizontal line right now so that everybody understands. There's
good
a certain
visual.
Baseline of how good he was, and he only used it to get back to that baseline. I just moved my hand up to where my hand was before, by the way, for everybody listening.
I'm super confused.
Don't worry about it. Anyway, Ryan Braun is this good. He only used steroids back in 2011 because he needed to get back to that because an injury had precluded him from getting to be that good again. So he needed them just to get back there. It wasn't that he was healthy and just wanted to take them to become extra good. Because I don't know, I just don't see that as being the case. The results indicate that he didn't need those to he's proving to be that good again. So that's my thought, and so you bring up a really good point, that he's the first one to perform this well after getting busted. I mean, that makes a pretty good case for him being a Hall of Fame-type player.
Switching sides then to the pitching part of it, we, like you said, Kyle Davies, no, it's Zach Davies still. I will never not make that mistake. Zach Davies almost gets a no-hitter. Chase Anderson had that one great game. I'm so excited for Zach Davies to be doing what he's doing the last two games. He's been just awesome. And you get the feeling that you just needed a little bit of sort of base work for that guy to turn a corner and become a really promising starting pitcher. I mean, there's so much that's going right for the Brewers right now, despite the fact that they're still four under 500, but they're going to get guys back from injury. Will Smith is back. Matt Garza is coming back, for better or worse. And even though Willie Peralta is still nowhere at major league level right now, you got to feel like everything else is kind of great for the Brewers right now. I mean, this is a really easy team to watch.
Yeah, think about it. As Willie Peralta is a guaranteed loss every time he takes him out, right? I mean, he's been that bad.
It's been
pretty
brutal.
Think he can get good again. Yeah, he can get good again. I mean, I'm not writing him off completely. He still has the benefit of the doubt, unlike somebody we've discussed earlier. But, like, he's been a guaranteed loss, and they're only 4 under .500. I mean, if Willie Peralta is just okay, he doesn't have to be great. If he's just okay, they're a .500 team. Isn't that unbelievable?
That's really crazy,
to say?
Yeah. It's really amazing. And their bullpen's been great. Their hitting has been adequate. Certainly Chris Carter has gone through swoons as well as streaks, as we'd expected he'd do. Jonathan LaCroix has completely rehabbed his value, as we hoped he would, after a little bit slow out of the gates, but he's been just fantastic. Ryan Braun, when he's in the lineup, has been fantastic. The only downside is he misses a lot of time with various ailments, but even when he's hurting, when you can tell he's hurting, he's pounding balls into the gap and balls over center field fences. So he's having a great year. And like I said, it's just an easy team to watch. There's less of that stressful strain of we're going to blow it, we're going to blow this game,
yep,
it's going to cost us down the line, because there still, you know, has to be that feeling that this team isn't going to the playoffs or anything ridiculous. But it's a really nice time.
As you tweeted last night, is it time to start sweating the results of every game?
I don't know. I sweated last night for the first time this year, where I just kind of, we were watching actually NCAA softball, and I was sort of following the Brewer game on Twitter, and it got dicey in the ninth, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going in the other room. I'm going to finish this Brewers game, and then I'll come back. I need to go watch. And I did, and
you know,
it was a good outcome.
You know what's funny to think about, and by funny I mean tragic? Willie Peralta started opening day. Isn't that just crazy to think about? Like, why? Why did that happen?
I wonder, and this is something we'll never know, but just from a confidence perspective, how rattling was that first outing for him? Because he had come off a bad year. Really, we were trying to see exactly what the Brewers had in Willie Peralta. And he was given that vote of confidence as the number one pitcher on this staff, and that's not necessarily what they were saying, but everyone understands the prestige that comes with mm-hmm. an opening day start. It goes really badly. And then he can't sort of get himself out of the hole in the next start. And you just wonder, because I do think Willie Peralta is a confidence guy. I think sort of he's got stuff that comes and goes a little bit, but I think he is a confidence pitcher, and I wonder maybe if they hadn't gone with him on opening day and gone with maybe Jimmy Nelson instead, what would have happened? I don't think it would really be markedly different, but that does cross my mind a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting. Four earned runs in four innings. It is not the way you want to start out a season.
The Major League Baseball draft will arrive on Thursday in a couple days.
Yay!
And that'll be a nice intersection between the pro team, the Milwaukee Brewers, and some prep teams from the area. Arrowhead, for example, is going to have a few guys who might hear their name get called. Kenosha Indian Trail has Gavin Lux, who could go Thursday night in that first round or first two rounds. The Kenosha Tremper team that we've talked about before has some guys who might get taken. Verona's got a great catcher. The state baseball tournament is coming up. Arrowhead, after a really disappointing loss in the sectional final, one of the great upsets, I think, in WIAA history. I really believe that when they got shut down by Alec Marsh and Milwaukee Ronald Reagan. They did not repeat history. They crushed two teams in this year's sectional, really as expected. And Arrowhead will be the top team at the state tournament when that gets going next week in Appleton. That's going to be an interesting show. Both Tremper and Indian Trail, the teams that beat Arrowhead this year, they're 27-2. Neither of those teams even made the sectional. That is just crazy. Another illustration of how crazy baseball can be.
Yeah, that's the craziest one for me, that neither of them made it. And you know, I did the story on Tremper earlier this year. They had six college recruits. I know Arrowhead has quite a bit themselves, but Tremper had six college recruits on their team and couldn't find a way, like you said, not only just to state, but into the sectional even. And then Kenosha Tremper has the best player in the state, who's going to be anywhere from a top 30 pick in the MLB draft. That's nuts that they couldn't advance. And in their place, there's a lot of good teams and good stories. I know it's not this area, but Green Bay Preble made it to state by throwing a no-hitter in the sectional final, which is just insane to do it on that kind of stage.
Yeah, that's very impressive. Great pitching performance. And Arrowhead has a guy that His name is Ryan Schmidt. He's committed to play at Illinois. He'll probably get drafted, but he's not a big projectable guy. He's not a big kid. I mean, he's big by normal human being standards, but not by MLB standards. So he's not a guy that's gonna maybe be a guy that you see taken in the first few rounds, but he's 18-0 the last 2 years, and his ERA is like 0.49 or something insane. So he's truly, if not the best, certainly one of the best pitchers in the state, and he's going to get a chance to showcase what he has. But Arrowhead has a very interesting quarterfinal matchup with Sun Prairie, who's traditionally one of the best teams in the state. And baseball, state baseball is tough because you play that first game on Thursday, or Tuesday actually, and then you got to come back that night and play again in the state semifinal. So you have to have, and you'd have to have this anyway over the course of a weekend, but you have to have two pitchers that are available that first day, and then it's kind of like whatever's left will take you into the championship game 2 days later. But it's a very tough thing for a team to win twice in one day, yeah, with everything on the line like that.
Against the best teams in the state. It's one thing to do, yeah, it in conference play or non-conference play, but yeah, best teams in the state. And then Milwaukee Lutheran, also defending Division II state champ. They are back in the tournament as well. Will I be seeing you up in Grand Chute / Appleton for the tourney?
Alas, no, you will not. I will not be there.
You're such a sports director. Just delegating all day.
I did use up a lot of my spring tournament work at the state track and field meet this past weekend. But the Lake Country Lutheran team, which had been to 3 straight state finals, they won the D3 title last year. They got beat in the sectional this year. They lost a lot from last year's team. They still had a couple pieces back, but it'll be a first time in a while that we have not seen Lake Country Lutheran up at state. But like you said, Milwaukee Lutheran carrying that Lutheran torch off to the state tournament.
And Green Bay's NEW Lutheran also there.
Yes, all the Lutherans.
Division 4 and St. Mary Catholic from Menasha.
All
those
are
my teams.
And the Catholics. Those are your teams?
Those are my teams. Yep.
But you
mentioned state track. Some of my teams made it there too. Like Bryant Brown did the story. I'm not bragging. I'm just like kind of bragging.
But you're inspirational.
Like the people I've done, but yeah, like the people I've done stories on have come through for me so far this year. Bryant Brown won the 100-yard dash. I think he lost the 200 by a couple hundredths.
Yep, that would be David Dunlap of Nicolet took that one.
Nice. Well, congrats to David. However, you ruined my story, and I don't like you.
Yes.
Yeah, but he won, and then David Hornifer from Brookfield East, he won the state tennis championship very easily, by the way. Like, he didn't drop a set, he didn't drop a game in the sectional. So he won 6-0, 6-0, 6-0, 6-0, 6-0, 6-0 in the sectional, which is impressive, and then was pretty similar in the state tournament. So he's really good at tennis. He's going to Dartmouth too. So not only is he good at sports and stuff, he's good at being smart and stuff. Yeah, he's really good at thinking.
It was a crazy, unbelievable weekend for Brookfield East High School because David Hornifer is from Brookfield East. He beats his teammate Robert Krill in the championship,
yep,
game. The top two singles players at East are the two best players in the state. He,
yep,
beats him for the title. In doubles, Patrick Krill and Doug Franken, also of East, won the Division I doubles title. Somehow their team did not make it to Team State. That went to Brookfield Central. So that was sort of a crazy outcome from last week. But not only did Brookfield East rule on the tennis court, they also ruled on the track. The boys team won their fourth state championship in the last 6 years. They had to win the 4x4. It came down to the last race, actually between Kettle Moraine, which was kind of a surprise in there. Brookfield East was one of the contenders for the title. And in the 4x400, basically the winner between those two teams, it's a little more complicated than that, but the team that finished higher there was going to win the state title. So Brookfield East not only finished higher, they won the race. They did it with a state record performance that had stood since 1990. Drew Bullen was the anchor of that team. Drew Bullen also took second in the long jump, took second in the 4x100, and won at the tape in the 4x200. There were three teams right there. It was a photo finish. And so they won that race. It was just thrilling for them. The girls' team took second place, Brookfield East, with Allie Bullen, Drew's twin sister. They're both going to West Point, so that's a great story. Allie Bullen, she won the long jump, so she won a state title. And the girls' team took second, crazy week for Brookfield East. I mean, they pretty much had everything going for them in athletics. And certainly there were a lot of other great stories from state track. Cami Davra of Whitefish Bay won both the 800 and 1600 for the third year in a row. She's just a junior. And Aubrey Roberts of Eau Claire Memorial lapping people left and right to set a state record in the 3200. That record was even older than the one in the 4x4. So lots of great performances at state, as there always are.
And was it as majestic as I remember it being? Beautiful summer day in La Crosse?
It was pretty sweet for a while. It was very comfortable. I mean, it was hot, but it was comfortable as state track and field standards go. And then the rain came right near the end of the day. This was kind of a bummer. So at like 4 o'clock, and the only events left are the 4x4, so girls and boys, D3, D2, D1, 4x4, and one section of the 3200, the boys 3200 in Division 1. Those are the only events left when the rain came, and the siren sounded because there was lightning, and they had to postpone it. And it's funny, because I was out at the discus area. Julio Perez of Kettle Moraine staged a little bit of an upset to win the discus title. And as the siren is sounding, and I thought there was still one person to throw in the discus, but the last person had literally just thrown. And that last throw was within inches of Julio Perez's throw. So the discus had just ended, so I'm talking to this kid as the rain starts falling, and I'm quite a ways away from shelter, and I'm thinking, well, this is an awesome story, but I'm going to die to get it because I'm not going to make it back in time. I did end up making it back with about a minute to spare, so that was kind of fun that Perez beat the rain and Cole Van Landen of Bayport was in there.
Either.
I am not a swift man at all. I love to watch other people exercise. Myself, not into that. So yes, it was interesting finish there for him, but then 2 hours go by before the meet resumes, which was kind of a frustration that we had to wait so long to just get really one events to finish up. But that's the way it goes. That's the typical history of state track and field, and it was still a fun thing to watch.
Beautiful. Well, congratulations. I'm happy for you. From what I understand, I can find basically every story I could ever want on mycountrynow.com. Is that correct?
Even though that is a made-up website, I will presume that it exists for something. But if you go to My Community Now or lakecountrynow.com, you will find tons of coverage from State Track by myself and Stephen Teets, who also did the story about Showalter that we were talking about earlier in the podcast. State softball is coming up this weekend. We have New Berlin West participating Thursday night, 8 o'clock, against New London, one of the teams from your area up in the Fox Valley. Yader. So that's a Division II battle. Why would they don't have an accent? All of Wisconsin has that accent. Intermittently,
yeah,
I don't know.
So it applied, didn't it?
I guess. It's just the Fox Valley isn't that far north. But back off. So state softball, state golf wrapped up early this week. Catholic Memorial won the Division II state championship. Marquette won the Division I title. We've got stories galore on those things happening. So a lot to talk about in the spring sport stratus something. And we have it all for you. What about a Time Warner Cable sports channel, JP?
Well, we had Oak Creek Menominee Falls baseball. I believe that was last night, but also replaying, or maybe Monday? Replaying this week, anyway.
Good battle between two of the best teams in the state.
For sure-sies. So that happened. On Sports Weekly, a couple cool stories. One is DePere High School Tennis, which I know is not this area, but that doesn't mean it's not a cool story. They made Team State at tennis for the second time ever, first time since 2009. They have two unbelievable talents in singles. One is Nathan Balthazar, who's a freshman. The other one, Benny Glazer, is a sophomore. Glazer is moving. His family is moving, I think, to Florida after this is all done. So this is, like, their last chance. Also, like, they play Friday, hopefully Saturday. They're moving on Sunday. So this this is, like, the last chance for him to hang out with his friends. And a legit quote from that team: it's nice we don't have to play Marquette right away. Like, that's how good Marquette is, and the landscape of state tennis is that, like, they're just excited because they don't have to lose right away. So good for them. But that's the pure tennis. The other cool story is two brothers from UW-Milwaukee, Brett and Nate Pozolinski, both made it to nationals for track and field. The first time UWM has ever had two athletes in the same national meet. Brett went for high jump, beat out Wally Ellenson, by the way. We all know about Wally's, how good he is at high jumping. Beat him, and then Nate went second in the 110 hurdles, lost his heat. There were six heats. The weather messed with it. Lost his heat, but still was able to qualify. He needed, like, this another of the six fastest times to qualify. And he made it. So now two brothers off to Eugene, Oregon for the national track meet. So cool story there. And they were training back home, back at Kimberly, which made for a little nice story. So there you go.
Two thoughts that both relate to Marquette University. Wally Ellenson was at the state track meet this past weekend. I believe his sister was running for Rice Lake. I was surprised to learn he'd never went 7 feet at the state meet. That record, only one guy had gone 7 feet. That was in Division One, and that all-division record got totally broken by a kid from Fox Valley Lutheran, Ben Kuczynski, who jumped 7-1 at the state meet. So I was thinking, Wally should just come down from the stands, and they can have a jump-off and see who's really king of Wisconsin high jump. And then the other thought from Marquette, which we never touched on, was that the team that beat Marquette in the first round of that lacrosse NCAA tournament ended up winning the whole thing. The like NCAA tournament.
Yeah, like it's some like one-off thing. Like, oh, the team that beat Marquette in that little
in that one state
that
meet.
They did.
Yeah. So the team that beat Marquette in their first ever visit to the NCAA tournament in the first round barely was the University of North Carolina. They went on to win the whole thing. So that's got to further the whole lacrosse momentum in the state of Wisconsin and in Marquette University. That's a whale of a thing.
No, it doesn't. It's just something that makes you feel better but doesn't actually matter.
Wow, you're a dark person
today.
I'm
just saying.
You're an angry person.
Okay, well, good job, buddy.
Yeah, good job to you as well. We'll be back next week, maybe, with more interesting thoughts from the world of Wisconsin sports. Maybe.
Love it. Beautiful. All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. Goodbye, friends.